This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Mets kicking off the season this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Coverage on SNY begins at 3 o'clock with this guy who does a tremendous job on the pre- and post-game. He is former Met and Yankee Todd Zeal, who joins Bart and Han on 98.7 ESPN. Todd, it's Chris and Bart. We appreciate the time and finally some baseball to actually talk about. It's got to feel pretty good.
It's going to feel great, and I'm holding my breath that we have baseball on the field at 4 o'clock, as you're saying. So I think it's going to be a big exhale once that opening lineup is announced and guys are at the plate and guys are on the mound, and we're watching what we've been missing for months.
You know, Todd, when you look at this team with what's transpired with Syndergaard and Stroman, and the expanded playoffs announced yesterday, has the impetus changed for the Mets, or at least the roadmap for the Mets to make it to the postseason changed from being a very good pitching team to a team that's going to have to out-hit a lot of teams?
Yes, it has. I mean, it has at least modified itself at some level. And I think, look, I was very bullish on the Mets' chances this year. I think I'm one of the guys here that is considered a homer because I have these guys going all the way, and I really like their makeup. And it was really, I think at some level predicated on that starting pitching depth, that even with the loss of Syndergaard, I think they had viable replacements with Porcello and Waka. And then I think their bullpen has shored itself up as well. But the loss of Stroman, I thought, was a pretty big blow, and it's going to be interesting to see how long he's out. But let's assume that he's out for about half this season and misses half of his starts in such a sprint. I think this core lineup that was so good, especially the second half of 2019, is going to really have to be great this season and slug their way to some wins, as well as being able to inch out and produce some runs to get the close games. But you know what? I think this expanded playoff format has actually been a benefit to the Mets. It gives them a little bit more latitude to get into the playoffs. And then with a guy like DeGrom as your top guy, you've always got a chance to get out to a 1-0 lead in a three-game series. So I think that really sort of helps their chances to get further along if they can get there.
I mean, we heard Brody talk about it. We often talk about it around here, the second half of the Mets season. Well, it won't be a second half, so to speak, of this season. So how important is it for guys like Conforto and Rosario to get off to a fast start to really be able to provide some coverage for some of the other guys in the lineup? And also, is this something in which Brody may overreach because – it's so many opportunities to get in the playoffs that he may not see with clear eyes if they need to make a move at the trade deadline?
It's a good question. I can't really speak for what Brody is doing. I know that he's continually looking at things, whether it be near trade deadline or not. I know that the loss of Stroman has got to at least make him an active pursuer of starting pitching, but it's not like there's just guys with great arms just sitting out there ready to be had at this point. So I think it's interesting that you bring in Rosario and Conforto because I think that's insightful. I think that, there's some expectations out of the Alonzos, J.D. Davis, and McNeil that I think, really got a lot of focus in the second half of last season. But I think a guy like Conforto and a guy like Rosario, who had a great second half last season, and Conforto, a guy that had just kind of a an under the radar solid season again. I think it is important for those guys to be the balance in what some of this other Mets offense looks like. And I think it is important for a guy like Conforto to really have sort of a breakout season to lead this club. I think he's a guy that's got a high ceiling. I think he can lead them in a lot of different ways. And I look for him to really jump out of the gate and set the tone for this Mets team.
Todd Zeal, SNY, their coverage for opening day begins in less than an hour at 3 o'clock. Todd, I hate to use the word expect. So what's fair to, I guess, a little bit stronger than hope for from Yoenis Cespedes?
That's a good question. I think that what to expect out of him, I think, would be for him to get quality at bats, to DH more than he plays left field, and to be good. I think what would be better than expected is for Cespedes to return to 2015-type form, which, you know, some of the reports coming out of summer camp were saying that he looked that good. I think that would be, you know, icing on the cake and in the hope category. But I think at this point, we should expect that he's still a quality big league player, that he's got his swing back, he's got some bat speed back, and I think he's going to be surrounded by guys that are going to give him enough protection that he could really do some damage in the middle of this Mets lineup if he gets in a rhythm.
I mean, how great is the universal DH? I think it's right on time for Cespedes where he is in his career. But when I look at that bullpen, and, you know, that was a big disappointment last year. Familia looked solid in his first outing. Diaz looked a little shaky. Who is it most important for them to have a bounce-back year from?
I think it's honestly more important for Familia. And I think it's more likely for Familia as well. I mean, he looks in great shape. He's very motivated. It looked like he had some depth to his slider. He looked like he was confident throwing his split. And he had a really good summer camp. I think it's really important for Diaz to bounce back, but I think Luis Rojas is probably going to have a little bit of latitude with him because of this sprint. It may be a little bit more bullpen by committee, and I don't think he necessarily has to designate Diaz as his closer, if you will, in air quotes, and can use the guys that are having solid outings and that are ready to bounce back. And it could be, whether it be Lugo or Familia, with Gazelman down, I think there's going to be a lot of reliance on those guys, as well as Justin Wilson. So I think it would be kind of like we talked about with Cespedes. I think it would be a great bonus if he got back to, you know, pre-2019 form, but I don't think at this point it's at least an expectation.
Now, you mentioned Lugo. Do we anticipate maybe Lugo being moved into the starting rotation a little bit because of the loss of Stroman right now? Is he a natural fill-in for him for that spot maybe?
Oh, gosh, that's the $64,000 question, right? I think, I think that Lugo could pitch anywhere. I think he's always said that he still feels that he's a starter. I think he could be fine in that rotation, but you have to also understand that with this sort of shortened, condensed version of spring training / summer camp, and him not having any expectation of being in that rotation until a day before they were getting ready to announce opening day lineups, I don't think he's stretched out. I think he's been geared to go one hard, try to recover for 2 days in a row with another day off. You can get multiple innings out of him, but I think that's a big difference than expecting him, especially in the sprint. You don't have a full season to kind of tune him up and get him stretched out. So I don't expect the Mets to play that card at this point. I think it would be a little premature, and I think it could have an impact on not only the bullpen, but Seth's ability to stay healthy if they tried to rush him into a starting rotation spot that he feels like he's got to stretch out in a short amount of time.
One or two more for Todd Zeal from SNY. He's got to go on the air here in a little bit. 3:00, their coverage begins. When you look at this kind of a situation that we're in, unprecedented, as a player, is this something, Todd, that you're only playing 60 games, but how much does that even out with the stress level that is going to be put on players this year?
I don't know. It's interesting because I think both sides have done a good job of trying to keep the health and safety protocols at a high to try to eliminate. And it's impossible to eliminate all risk. So no reason to even consider that a possibility. But I think the guys have, you know, considered that they're in as safe an element as they can be in with risk involved. And it's going to be incumbent upon them to concentrate on baseball. There's so many different variables this year, though, with no fans, limited travel, playing teams from primarily from your division and in the Eastern of the other leagues. So there's going to be enough to make things interesting that I think guys are going to stay motivated. But look, I think there is a sense of urgency out of the gate. That's the nature of having a sprint. But I think the expanded playoff roster has given a little latitude to that, because I think one of the things that nobody wanted to see was 20 games into a season, if a team gets off to a poor start, for them to mail it in because they don't think they have enough time left. So at least this gives everybody a chance to take a breath, acclimate to what this sprint looks like, and still have a chance to get to the postseason and maybe make something interesting happen in October.
With this season being a sprint, do we anticipate that there are going to be a lot of trades at the trade deadline, because everybody can realistically still be in it and be one player, one move away?
That's a great question. I'm always fascinated to what happens at trade deadlines. There seems to be trends in certain years. I think there's going to be some obvious buyers. I think there's pressure on teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers. Maybe there's buyers in somebody like the Rays, who have, by all accounts, a very good opportunity to get deep into the postseason. But, you know, considering that there's already been financial sacrifices made from ownership, teams may want to just take their chances with what they've got with this expanded playoff roster, instead of going out and making moves that could be, you know, something that costs them something of value in the future. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's in the forefront when that trade deadline comes up.
Last one for Todd Zeal. It's a two-part question. Todd, I worked prior to you being there at SNY for 8 years. One question I've never gotten a true answer to, as closely as I worked with him: is Gary Apple's hair real? And secondly, do you feel as if him wearing glasses this year could throw off and you at all in any of your analysis, because that is a severe look change?
Oh, that, you know, those are the easiest questions in the world. Absolutely, his hair is real, and I don't mind his glasses at all. As a matter of fact, you know, I think the contacts sometimes are troubling for him and give him some irritation in his eyes. So, hey, if Gary can see, that means he can read the prompter and he can look me in the eye. And, hey, if I was able to wear my glasses, if I didn't look like such a nerd, I'd probably wear my glasses on, because I can see like an eagle if it's outside of 5 feet. But if I'm trying to read my notes, no chance. I got to put it in a very large font.
Well, Todd, listen, appreciate it. Enjoy it this afternoon. Again, SNY's coverage begins at 3 o'clock. Thanks again.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Todd Zeal from SNY. You know, I've worked with Apple forever. I love him to death. I wonder about the hair.
You gotta touch it, man. You gotta touch it. If it feels
If
it feels like Chucky or some type of doll hair, Care Bear Cousins or something like that, then you got your answer.
Look, from a Met standpoint, I can't see, even with the injuries that they've had, how making the postseason now is not a given, or is not a full-on expectation. And right. Even, you know, they've said a little bit, we're in win-now mode. Okay, yeah. Let's see it.
I mean, you got to think, they doubled down last year during the trade deadline. They made the trade for Stroman and try to have Stroman, Wheeler, Noah, and DeGrom. And they made a hell of a run. They fell short. But we know if that team would have gotten the postseason with that pitching, it potentially they could have been like the Nationals with shutout guys and being able to have a real legitimate chance. Because that's what wins. You know, I know a lot of times we talk about the run support, but, you know, pitching is what wins in the postseason. You know, and they've been set up for years, and we were waiting for years to see all their prospects and all the DeGroms and the Harveys and the Syndergaards and the Wheelers and the Mats. We've been waiting for them to put it all together at the same time so that we can see, like, what it looks like, you know, mowing through. Meanwhile, people, you know, other teams have been going with a different philosophy, right? You know, it's almost like the Knicks, like, you know, wanted to lead the league in 15-footer shot instead of taking a three like every other team. It's like New York teams going against the trends. Like, all of a sudden, they want to go with pitching, but everybody else had position players and built around hitting and things like that. In the bullpen, we went with our starting pitching. So, let's see. We finally addressed the starting pitching. Let's see if that pays dividends. Now, they seem like a more well-rounded team. Now, you're not just solely dependent on Diaz. If Diaz can't do it for me, has closed before. I mean, you probably don't want to do it, but Betances has closed before, and he's a professional. I mean, if not, last year, you know, watching Seth Lugo pitch nine and the eighth and the ninth looked like it was a good outing as well. So you got options now. So if somebody doesn't step up to the plate, you don't have to be stuck with them. You can say, you know what, next man up, and mean it.
And you can mean it, because there is going to be a team that is near 500 that makes the playoffs, if not under 500, that's going to make the playoffs. And not just make it, but from a Mets standpoint, if you actually had Stroman back by the time that came around, and you're going to make it, you're going to set yourself up pretty well, even if you're 6, 7, 8, I don't care what your seed is in this, best of three, you can go win. There's no reason that you can't go and win those games, even if you're not heavily favored. And I really believe this offense is going to have to carry the day in an awfully big way. And, you know, if and when the sale goes through, and you would expect it to go through by the end of the calendar year at latest, because of all the financial implications of that, this is it for Brody, whether or not you want to admit it. And I don't think it's fair to Luis Rojas. He may only get 60 games to work with now that he's the guy. There are a lot of guys with a lot of pressure on them right now. And let's see if you make diamonds out of it or, you know, not.
Like my coach always tell me, either sugar or it. Ain't no in between. Ain't no in between, bro.
I got to get a plug in for my own new podcast I just started doing every day on Yankee. Savages in the Box.
Every day?
I'm doing it Monday through Friday, 20 minutes after the game at night, drop 6 a.m. the next day. All the sound, all the reaction, analysis, preview, and fan reaction as well.
Did you get Booney naming rights? My God, the freaking Savages in the Box!
We did not get the naming rights for that yet, but we put it in the open. I don't know that we have to slide any money his way, but you know, listen, these ideas are all out there in the air. You don't know who comes up with them, but they're everywhere. It's everywhere now on the wherever you can get podcasts. By all means, check it out every Monday through Friday. It'll be up at 6 a.m. Everything off the game the night before in just 20 minutes. And it's funny, before we get to audio files, I just wanted to play you something, because when I look at the Mets over the last 10 to 15 years, the word that always comes up is hope, right? Hope.
Wish.
And a couple of nights ago, as it's on, you know, 150 times a week, Shawshank Redemption is on.
I hope to be my friend Andy.
All I could think of was Morgan Freeman from Shawshank Redemption, and I don't know that this has ever been more apropos of Met fans.
Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope can drive a man insane.
It really can, Bart.
I hope to find Stroman. I hope to see the Grom and my friends doing well. I hope the ocean blue and W's in the wind column is just as blue as I've imagined them in my dreams. Get busy,
I think
living.
The next line was, I hope the Cespedes can stay healthy.
Get busy living, get busy dying.
And it's been a lot of that lately. It's been a lot of that lately for Met fans. 800-919-3776. All right, audio files, let's do it.
The audio file.
All right, we start off with Ron Rivera from Outside the Lines regarding the new name, still yet to be named, for the Washington football team?
I want it to be inclusive. It's one of the things that we talked about as a group, and this is kind of what happened. You know, we talked about going in and doing a deep dive and an understanding of the name change, and we announced that on July 3rd. On July 13th, we told everybody we were going to retire the name and the logo. And then we came out yesterday on the 23rd and we told everybody, you know, we've learned through this process of trying to understand it that it's going to take us at least 12 to 18 months to do it right. You know, we may have a decision on the name sooner, but to do it right, to produce it right, to put it out right, you know, we've got to go through the process. So we'll probably have the name, you know, a lot sooner than I think we expected. But we just want everybody to know this is going to take a little bit more than we had anticipated originally.
12 to 18 months?
What kind of think tank y'all got?
Yeah.
I mean, I can get, man. All inclusive? Like, it's going to be hard to be all inclusive.
I'm on Red Tails. I'm still right on that.
Me too. I love Red Tails, Tuskegee Airmen. You know, played a major role in bringing this country together and bringing it success. But now they want to complicate it.
All right. If you are trying to talk to Native Americans and how to get them involved and honor them in this. I mean, the one thing I've heard consistently from Native American leaders over the last month or so is really naming any team after anything Native American is not honoring anybody. You know, it can be taken a lot of different ways. So they don't even necessarily want that. I understand where they're coming from, but it's...
Yeah, because so many different tribes, too, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you don't want to offend anyone.
Yeah, highlighting one tribe is disrespecting...
It shouldn't take 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, I feel like I'm doing homework. I mean, if you're doing that, you need to get a new advertising team, a new marketing team, because they're bad.
All right, before we get to the Knicks head coaching situation, there is the little matter of who's, you know, going to be playing for them next year. Here's Ian Begley from SNY on an interesting situation they're going to be checking up on.
If you're looking at realistic trade targets for the Knicks and even the Nets, I think we look at players who are going to hit free agency sooner, maybe that class of 2021, class of 2022. And I know that the Knicks and the Nets are at least keeping an eye on, at least monitoring the situation of Zach LaVine and the Bulls. That's not to suggest that Zach LaVine is going to ask for a trade from Chicago. I don't think that that's going to happen. But the Bulls have had some instability in recent years. If that continues and LaVine decides that he's probably not going to re-sign with the Bulls will probably start talking to teams about potential offers. So that's what the Knicks and the Nets are keeping an eye on with that specifically. And I'm sure they're keeping an eye on several different scenarios like that across the NBA.
You want Zach LaVine?
I mean, wasn't Zach LaVine in Minnesota with Thibodeau, and he traded him?
Mm-hmm.
So why the hell would the Knicks be in the trade? You think I want to play for you and you got rid of me for Wiggins? Hell no. I don't know if I'm off a little bit, but I know that he was with Minnesota. He won the dunk contest, did all that good stuff, and then he was gone. Poof. Gave up on me. Had the injury. Poof. Be gone. Send him to Chicago.
No, he was still the coach. Thibodeau was still the coach in Minnesota when they traded him away.
So hell no, I ain't coming back to no damn New York. I wouldn't ask for. I'll go to the Nets. I ain't going to play for Thibodeau. So if you want me to come to the New York, you got to change your coach. Because I'd be damned if I give up. If I play with somebody that gave up on me.
I'm tell you. I mean, listen. I know it happens bizarrely.
Hell no.
But
yeah. You know. How long did Carmelo play with D'Antoni? He got. See, I told you, suck. Get him out of here. He cut his ass in 2 months.
I mean, Thibodeau was not just a coach. Remember, he was basically running the show up there.
My point.
So, yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know if it's the best idea. I like Zach LaVine. He's intriguing to me, but I don't know that I'm looking for that mix right away. All right, how about Aaron Judge after the game last night? Now, you saw the Yankees before the game, and I think the Nats did too. Agreed to kneel, but they kneeled before the national anthem. So here's Judge after the game on that decision.
For us, it was, you know, we had a meeting and just decided we wanted to do something united, you know, something together. That's something that I told you guys today, no matter what we kind of came out of, you know, our decision would be something united. And, you know, we got a lot of guys in this clubhouse with different beliefs, different feelings and different walks of life and where they're from, different countries. And we want to respect all that. And, you know, as a team, we came, you know, on the United decision to, you know, kneel, you know, right before the anthem. You know, that was our decision, and that's, you know, kind of what we wanted to go with. We wanted something to, you know, include everybody, and we're all together on this.
Now, I'm one who believes that we're beyond kneeling. When your oppressor or your the person who's telling you not to do it gives you permission to do it, then it's lost its bite. So the fact that people are kneeling before the anthem, they're standing up, like, who cares? If that's the point, do your demonstration when you come out of, you know, out of the dugout, out of the locker room, and do it then. Like, at that point, kneeling and then getting up before the anthem serves no purpose. So to me, like, and this what happens, you get a watered down protest. So just don't do it. Just stand up. Like, because you're making a mockery, because if it was done, and the reason it was done during the anthem, because we're holding the country accountable for living up to it, to the words of that song, freedom and justice for all, then the fact that you're standing up for it or kneeling before it is a non-protest. So just don't protest.
Let me ask this question. Is it a no-win situation for whatever they do at this point?
Yeah, it is, because for me, you now it's becoming popular.
Right.
So now you're doing it because, like, oh, I don't mind if they protest, if they kneel. So, like, they're giving you, once again, like, they're giving you permission to do something. You know what I'm saying? So now you had to ask for permission. So why do it? It's watered down. It's not real. If it's not the original protest that Colin did that got him kicked out of the league, got him blackballed, then don't do it. And that's fine, too. Wear your Black Lives Matter patch or whatever you want to wear on your arm and keep it moving. But don't play both sides of the fence. That's playing both sides of the fence. That's the Jerry Jones thing.
Here's what, if you're Judge and you're the leader of this team, okay? With all of that being the case, and there are different guys on the team with different beliefs, then I just say this. Guys, let's not make this about our personal relationships. These are our personal beliefs. Everybody, it doesn't have to all be done together.
It don't.
Everybody just do whatever you want to do. And we're not going to hold it against each other and let it fracture us if we don't agree on things.
Right,
that's all.
Right, you have different political views, different religious views. You got all kind of different views in that locker room. If we're going to embrace America and what America is supposed to be, it's supposed to be a melting pot of different people making a nice big stew. So if you want to kneel, I'm not going to say anything about you kneeling. If you do kneel, if you don't, I don't have a problem with you either. Just do your own thing. Like, everybody comes out, they got their own celebration. Everybody got their own way of which they want to wear their uniform. Some people want to wear their pants up. Some people want to wear them down. Some people want to have 13 buttons open so you can see their neighbor if you void or anybody else, right? Nobody cares. Embrace your individuality. Make your statement that you want to make for you. You're speaking for just you. Quit trying to make people speak for a cause and make people speak for an entire team when they may not believe it. Because if you don't believe it, it's going to come off as unauthentic.
Then there's LeBron James, who was asked about being black and whether or not, and I don't know if he was asked it like this, but basically he says being black is not a movement.
A lot of people kind of use this analogy talking about Black Lives Matter as a movement. It's not a movement. When you're black, it's not a movement. It's a lifestyle. We sit here and say it's a movement, and okay, how long is this movement going to last? Don't stop the movement. No, this is a walk of life. When you wake up and you're black, that is what it is. It shouldn't be a movement. It should be a lifestyle. This is who we are, and we understand it, and we know that for one step that someone else might have to take, or for one yard someone else may have to take, and we know we got to take 5 more steps, and we know we got to take 10 more yards to get to the end zone. I mean, we understand that. We know that. So, but also what makes us, a strong, powerful, it makes us so unique and unified is that we have so much hardships in our life, either from personal experiences or loved ones, or reading history, or seeing videos, Rodney King, just being a part of just the communities that you're in, where you just racially profiled from the time you come out of the womb. So it's not a movement. I don't like the word movement. Unfortunately, in America and society, there ain't been no damn movement for us. There ain't been no movement. We land in this with justice for Breonna Taylor. We're going to continue to harp on that.
I mean, what LeBron's trying to say, when you suggest that something's a movement, you suggest that it's a fad and it has an end to it. Like, what he's saying is, listen, I'm black every day. This ain't something I can turn on and turn off. And what he's saying is why he feel like when you do make it as an African-American, why you are able to go so far, because you have plenty of scar tissue, so you're not easily broken, that you've been through so much that when you face adversity at any point in your life, whether it's Eric Berry when he got cancer, whether it's losing the death of a loved one, whether it's, you know, having a significant injury like Tyrann Mathieu or guys like that, they come back because they understand that failure is a part of your black journey. And it's a journey for a lot of people. But I feel like you feel like, you know, you've been going against the odds all the time. What's defining one more time? And LeBron's done it his whole life. And, you know, if you see a professional athlete, just think about how what he had to go through to get there. Maybe not having the money to play the sport. Maybe not having the resource to get the training that he needed. Maybe, you know, not really having food on the table. Maybe not having a stable house. Maybe not being able to afford to go to all the camps that the other kids can go to. And they just found a way to endure no matter what. I say it all the time. The truth is the truth. You can't deny the truth. If you're good enough and you just stay consistent and don't quit on yourself, eventually the world and everybody else will know you are.
800-919-3776. Let's squeeze in a call before we step aside. We got a lot of chance to get in as many calls as we can. 800-919-ESPN. Bob in New Jersey is next on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing? You can hear me?
Yes, sir.
I'm calling because of you were just talking about.
Oh, Bob, we lost Bob.
We lose Bob?
Randy Levine.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm talking about Randy Levine. And the Yankees. I'm a Yankee season ticket holder. I've been a Yankees fan my entire life. I was there for Reggie's three home runs, Chris Chambliss' walk-off, Aaron Boone's walk-off, Mr. November home run, the last four games in the Arizona series 2001. And this is an embarrassment as a Yankee fan. I called the stadium. I talked to my rep. He's been on the phone all day with the Yankee fans who are furious that the management has decided to let this clown come and throw a pitch at Yankee Stadium. It's like defecating on Memorial Park.
You broke up earlier, and thanks for the call, Bob, because we don't need to put it in those terms necessarily, but he's talking about the president coming and throwing out the first pitch.
Well, he's talking about politicizing the game when it's supposed to be about the game, and we know that that's going to be – it's going to be a point where players are going to have to decide if they kneel, and then it's almost like do you do it in defiance because you oppose what he's – the message that he's saying about the whole movement. And it just makes it messy. Like, he could have threw the pitch out in Washington. I mean, that's where he's from, but it's going to rub people the wrong way. Him coming up here knowing what's happening with the painting of Black Lives Matter in front of the Trump Towers. It's like going back and forth. And for everybody that says they want to kind of take the politics out of sports, this is an opportunity just to open the stadium, have fun, had a great day. But it's going to be complicated because now the game is going to start off under scrutiny about what people did and didn't do during the anthem or during the first pitch.
Now, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know whether they asked him or he asked them. My gut would say that the president's office asked to do it because I don't know that the Yankees are going out of their way, no matter what their political beliefs are, to ask the president in this climate to come and do this. I just don't think it benefits them in any way. But if the president calls you, are you supposed to tell him no? If you're the Yankees, I don't know. I think he wants that division and that nastiness aspect.
Because, the Yankees, honoring the champions yesterday, and the Yankees were there. So it's not like, I want to just go to the Yankees. I'm from New York. I've always been a fan. No, you had the Yankees and the champions right there. It was the perfect time. It's right down the street from your house.
Yep. So, he doesn't want to do it without fans in the stands. I think that's what he thinks, that somehow there's going to be fans there in August when he's supposed to do it. We'll see. That's the thing that he's missing there is if he wants that, what's the word I'm looking for? Just being a guy that attracts a lot of attention from both sides that I can't think of the word right now.
Yeah, that makes two of us. I got a bit low score on my ACT.
Well, I'm just not that bright to begin with, period. 800-919-3776. If he wants that, then, I don't know that he's going to get that reaction from the fans that he's talking about. Well, You know what's not healthy? Stressing about work, Bart. Or maybe you're out of work. You got to stop. Hit reset. You can start a new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months from the comfort of your own home, even if you have zero computer experience. Go to mycomputercareer.edu. Take the free career evaluation today. Live online classes meet just twice a week. An emergency relief grant of up to $3,500 is available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Jonathan Winthrop points it out. The word I'm looking for is polarizing. And for some reason, I just couldn't think of it because I, you know, my brain just locks up sometimes now.
You think about
with the amount of television I have consumed, Bart.
Yeah, well, you got the Mets playing today, so you're thinking about the polar bear, which is Pete Alonso.
Yeah, there you go. Good call. Let's hit the calls and get as many as we can in here. Here's D in Queens next on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, D.
Charles and Scott, how you guys doing, man? Pleasure talking to you guys.
What up? What up? Pleasure.
All right, I got a question for you guys. But before I ask you a question, I got a simple thing. Colin, I can beat the fat man. And Bart Scott, since you came on, I appreciate you being on the show. And I got to say, I holla. So, all right. So
yeah, we'll see if you can beat the fat man. I'm back next week.
I can beat the fat man. The problem is I can't get through to you. That's the problem. Well, anyway, let's move forward to today's question. Obviously, DeGrom is a stud. Cole is a stud. If we eliminate those two guys, who would you nominate to be the MVP of both the Yankees and the Mets?
Oh, that's easy for me.
Go ahead.
For the Yankees, is Gleyber Torres. I think Gleyber is the unicorn, man. I think he's going to really have a breakout season. And for the Mets, it's a little harder on that side. Well, yeah, I think McNeil can mess around and win the batting title.
Yeah,
I mean, he was on his way last year, so I would go maybe with McNeil because I think the obvious is Alonso, but I think McNeil can come around and steal the show. He was stealing the show a little bit last year, but he got a little banged up.
If we're going MVP off of winning, you know, which is kind of how I grade MVP, most valuable player to his team's success is how I look at it. For me, the guy that has to be it for the Mets this year is Cespedes, because I think he takes them from being a very good offensive team to a great offensive team if he can, you know, deliver anywhere near what he does in his prime. And then I would shift it over to here's the thing. I can't plan on Judge and Stanton being healthy. Just based on the last few years, it's harmful to plan that way, because if you don't plan on them missing games, then you're, you know, I just think you're asking for trouble. So I will go with
Clay.
My guy's LeMahieu, man. Where did you think I was going to go with?
Team, so I can't disagree with you on that. If I can throw in one last question, what's the over-under on wins for both teams?
Go ahead, Bart. Thanks for the call, D.
Well,
how many games are the Yankees going to win? You had them at north of 40 yesterday, right?
I had them at 45.
45.
Losing 15 games.
All right. With the Yankees, I'll go with 42. And the actual over-under number with the Yankees is 37.5. And then the Mets is 31.5.
I'll tell
you what.
you sourpuss.
No, I don't want to be that guy.
But?
I don't want to be that guy.
But?
I'm a realist. I have been burned too many times with my heart over my head that I have learned to not go with my heart over my head. Give me the under. The Mets are 29 and they make the playoffs anyway. 29-31, they're the seventh seed in the National League. How about that?
Okay, as long as they get in the postseason, it's all good.
You got them over.
But look at go back to his MVP question. You talk about Gleyber. Did you see the chart they put up yesterday? You know, Alex Rodriguez at 22 with 42 home runs, and Gleyber at 23 with 38. He's just getting warmed up, man.
I could not be more in lockstep with you about the guy that has to be here for the next 15 years.
Yeah,
and that's him. It's not Judge. It's Gleyber Torres, who is 23 years old and doing these things. And My God, that was just the steal of the century when you look back at 2016, making that trade. And you ended up with Chapman back anyway.
Exactly. You talk about you give him for a rental, get Chapman right back. I mean, yeah, now you haven't cashed in because Chapman gave up the home run that sent you home. But it wasn't his fault either because he didn't have the buzzer anti-buzzer ball going on. But you look at what Glaber's done. I mean, I think I put him right up there with Soto, and I put him up there with Acuna as far as young talent, the guys that are going to take the baseball, that's going to take the baton and be the superstars in the future. I'd rather give him that because you give Glaber a 13-year contract. He's only 36. You give that to Judge? You giving that to Judge?
Nope.
Nah.
No,
and we know what the mark is. It's $365 million. That's the bottom. So you gonna give that to Judge? No, you gonna have to say goodbye to Judge, whether people realize it or not. That conversation is gonna have to be had,
yep.
And it's gonna come up between: do we pay Glaber or do we pay Judge? And you can't pay both because you're stuck with Stanton because he ain't never opting out of that 10-year contract. So you can't get stuck with two old dudes in their 40s that you got to pay $20 million to a year annually.
No, and that is going to be a real conversation, and that's what people don't want to look at it that way.
Because it's early.
It's early, and Judge is the homegrown guy, but you can see it down the road. And if he continues to get hurt, there's not a discussion to be had. You know, and it's unfortunate, but unless you can stay on the field and be productive, why would you have two guys who are basically the same player and pay them the ridiculous amount of money that you can?
Yep.
Let's see here. Whoops. This just in from the NFLPA.
Can't wait.
The NFLPA Executive Committee voted unanimously to recommend the proposed changes to the CBA.
Do what?
The NFLPA The NFLPA Executive Committee has voted unanimously to recommend the proposed changes to the CBA. I guess, is that the health thing?
I thought they already talked about the CBA. So what are they redoing a new CBA for?
Yeah,
recommended changes? I don't get it. Oh, is it the 40% that they're talking about, the money split?
Are they talking about the money split? That's what I'm not clear on here. Because that's just a statement from the NFLPA. So what does that mean at this point? I'm going to check Schefter's Twitter real quick and see if he's got anything on it. He just had the league meeting happening. So they voted to approve that. And I'm assuming, I can't imagine that means anything financially right now. I can't imagine that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know how you had that conversation. People were starting to report going to get their checks, going to get their initial test. Ugh.
What are those proposed changes? Well, keep it in mind this afternoon when you're listening to Michael and the boys. Great job out of Jonathan Winthrop, Anthony Buzik as well. Bartholomew, good to be with you, brother. Talk soon.
I'll holla.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.